Hello, this is Rob Gellis. I am today interviewing Greg Berninger, the town historian of Ghent. Greg, thank you so much for this interview today.
Rob, thanks for coming up to the town hall here. It's a pleasure to speak with you about Ghent history. Ghent is, it's a marvelous place to live. Anyone who's ever lived here has great memories, no matter what time period they grew up in. But you can divide the town up into a few different time periods. After its first founding in 1818, a long time ago, people in Ghent still owned slaves at that time, so really almost a primitive era. And agriculture was dominant. Then the railroads come in around the time of the Civil War. That changes everything. It connects Ghent much more to the wider world. The population center moves where most people think of as Ghent today, Bartlett House, Dairy Queen area. That's all post-Civil War, after the trains come. And as happens, the trains leave. The tracks are gone by the 1970s, and Ghent still has a lot of agriculture and a lot of newer people who've moved into town. And maybe the future is broadband, the internet, people working from home. I'm not sure, but we'll find out.
You put together a history of Ghent in a large softcover book.
Yeah. So at the beginning of last year, our bicentennial year, I was asked to be town historian, which is a little like getting out of med school and doing open heart surgery the next day. But I was very lucky in that my family has lived in Ghent since the 1880s. And I grew up with my father, who always lived in Ghent, telling me stories, showing me the little spots in town where things used to happen. And of course, everybody in Ghent was very forthcoming with whatever they knew, whatever resources they had. So in a pretty short period of time, I did write Ghent 2018, A History of Our Own. And I'm very happy with how it came out. I think it's very accessible. It has 70 pictures and maps in it. And you can get a copy at Love Apple Farm in West Ghent or a copy here at the town hall.
Maybe you could talk a little bit about the agricultural area. I know there's dairy farms and other different farming here.
Yeah, Ghent's sort of, if you follow west to east, Ghent is fairly flat. And then once you get past Route 66, it's still a little flat, but then it starts to go up and you get into the hills. Farming's much more difficult in the hills, but there's that beautiful, the Squamamock Flats is the old name for it, between Ghent and Philmont. And of course, West Ghent has great fields as well. Let me just do a quick tale of two towns. Austerlitz and Ghent are born almost the same day. They have almost the same population. But right about 1820s and 30s, people discovered better farmland in Western New York and even beyond that. And the marginal farmland in Columbia County started to empty out. Austerlitz's population went down immediately. Ghent's population was very stable because we do have this nice, flat, very fertile land available to us. There was also the trains to ship the products out. Ghent was really the Saudi Arabia of hay, as I call it. In the late 19th century, there were maybe 100,000 hungry horses in New York City. No place to grow hay in New York City. So Ghent had a 15,000 square foot hay export facility right sort of between where the Bartlett House is today and the Ghent VFW. And they had three hay presses. And this is a big 20 foot tall sort of shoebox that you would load hay in, loose hay. A horse would walk in a circle, moving the floor of the hay press up, and it would form about a 300-pound bale of hay. And there were three of these turning in Ghent, right? Again, it's a big empty spot right now because it all burned down in 1891. But Ghent exported a great deal of hay to the cities. And then just as hay exporting was going out, because of subways and even cars coming in, Ghent had two Borden's dairy plants. And again, that took advantage of the railroad tracks. So it was a place for farmers to bring their raw milk every day. and this was right up into the 1950s at least, and that raw milk was processed in the plant and shipped out to people all over. Uniquely, in Columbia County, Ghent had a Borden's certified milk plant, completely separate from the processing plant, and they had their own cows, their own workers. Their workers had throat cultures done. It was super hygienic because the milk was never pasteurized. So it was extra nutritious, and doctors in cities would even prescribe that to patients who needed to get themselves built back up. So Ghent had two plants, one for the sort of everyday cow, and then the special super hygienic certified plant with its own set, with its own herd.
Does Ghent go into what we see Chatham to a certain past Dairy Queen? And
yeah, a lot of people don't know this. A lot of people, I'm glad you brought that up, Rob. About half, actually more than half, of the village of Chatham is in the township of Ghent. The other half is in the township of Chatham. So if you're standing at the Kinderhook Bank in Chatham, which is the old train station, you're in Ghent. If you walk over to the clock tower, you're in the town of Chatham. So almost all of the rail, massive rail complex in the town of Chatham, the fairgrounds, Columbia County Fairgrounds, the firehouse, the Catholic Church, all of that is in the town of Ghent. And most people don't know that. Of course, the people live there know that because they write out a tax check every year to the town of Ghent and the village of Chatham. But, it's called Chatham, but we consider it Ghent, and it is.
When did they stop rail service to Chatham?
That's a good question. I'm going to, I don't know if I ever actually nailed the year down, but I believe I'm going to say maybe 1970, and somebody out there is probably shaking their head at me. But maybe around 1970, I've seen a color photo of the last station agent taking the Chatham sign down. And the photo looks to be around 1970.
Let's say in the 40s, during the war, that must have been a boom. Things were used again. I'm sure chains were there constantly during the wartime.
Yeah, without question. My own father departed for basic training on a very, very cold February day for World War II from that station in Chatham. So there are many people around who have memories of getting on and off trains there, riding to in from East Chatham to go to school at the Chatham High School, and riding out of Chatham to go to schools in Albany. So it was very much a functioning place into World War II. West Ghent was almost, was really its own community over there. And let's call it around Love Apple Farm, the West Ghent Church, the old Red Barn ice cream shop, which the building is still there. That was as important a place as any other place in Ghent. That grew up on the Old Post Road, the main road from New York City to Albany. At one point, there were three mills there. In the 18th century, there was a mill there on Old Mill Road. And that mill was working up until the 1930s. So, and there were blacksmith shops, stores. There was, of course, the church, which is still there and still doing okay. There was a school. And, of course, no community is complete without its tavern. And I just discovered this, Rob. It'd been driving me crazy. Where was the tavern in West Ghent? No community in the 19th century before the Civil War was complete without a tavern. And I finally found it in a newspaper article, and then I found the building on a map from 1851. Van Bramer's Tavern was right next to the cemetery in West Ghent. So you have the Reformed Church in West Ghent, the cemetery, and there's a little house there on Old Post Road. And that was where, not that house, but that's where Van Bramer's Tavern was. So I was very happy to find the last piece. We had a school, we had stores, we had mills, we had farms, but I got the last piece there for that. And of course, don't forget Oh My. Do you know where the name Oh My comes from, Rob?
No.
Well, everybody's got a story. The one I'm going with for now, I finally nailed this down because a lot of people ask me, where's that name come from? Oh My got a post office around in the 1890s. And the postal service insisted on a unique name. So West Ghent wasn't going to cut it because there was already a Ghent post office. And I found a newspaper article again where the postmaster, J.J. Van Valkenburg, told the story. He may have made it up, but this is the story he told. He was sitting with his daughter in the house there that's still standing where the post office was. And he said, I just don't know what we're going to do. We can't come up with a name. And his daughter said, oh, my. And that was it. And he submitted the application and they took oh my. So that's the current story that I'm sticking with.
So on when you take 9H.
9H.
How far, it runs eventually into Kinderhook, but how far is Ghent, the Ghent part?
Maybe half a mile before you get to Lindenwald. So it's quite a ways. There's a place there where they sell landscaping rocks. That's in Ghent. So somewhere between there and Martin Van Buren's Lindenwald.
And the other way, if you're going the other direction, Kozels is Ghent?
Kozels is in Ghent, and then the industrial park. The intersection of 9H and 66 is not Ghent.
Oh.
That's North Claverick. So right in there is the town line. You know, I kind of joke the last two things in West Ghent, besides Love Apple Farm, are the two competing institutions for people in the 19th century and for lifestyle. We still have the church and we still have a tavern. Of course, there's no tension there now. But in the early when Ghent was founded in America, there was a lot of tension between the churches, of course, and the taverns for a way of life. Ghent's funny. It has two airports. We have a grass strip airport on what we call Nine Mile Run, much closer to the hamlet of Ghent. And so we have a little grass strip airport. It's owned by an organization, and then the county airport.
Maybe there's a story outside of what we're talking about. Maybe there's something there.
Well, yeah. You know, there's so much to cover. When you're a town historian, for every one thing I learn, it reveals two things I don't know. I never knew there was a hay press in Ghent. I learned that. Then I want to know exactly where it is and what happened to it. And so I feel I know less and less. But once in a while, I come across something and I just decide to learn all about it. This past winter, I learned about a head-on train collision near the Ghent Union Cemetery. Very close to Cemetery Road on the Ghent, near the Ghent-Mellonville Road. So I started digging and digging around, and I found an entire 350-page court transcript about this train wreck. And I got very involved in it because you feel very close to the people of the past when you read their stories. And to me, that's the spiritual component of history. So this story of the train wreck started in 1881, started the year before when Mr. Frisbee, the engineer, had a stroke. And of course, after that, he couldn't run the trains anymore in 1880. But he got back on an engine in 1881. His first day back at work in Hudson, the brakes failed on one of the engines. He did all he could to stop it, but he couldn't, and he had to jump at 40 miles an hour, and the engine crashed. He was pretty beat up. But the railroad sent him out to Chatham first thing next morning at 5 a.m. to pick up another engine to replace the one that the brakes failed on and that he had to jump from. Well, poor Mr. Frisbee is disoriented, tired, and achy from the day before. He thinks he saw the train coming in from Hudson, but it turns out it wasn't. So Mr. Frisbee gets on the substitute engine and heads south toward Ghent, eventually to Hudson. He's not on the timetable. So there were no radios. You know, the trains, when they were out there, those engineers were wed to the timetable. And if your train is listed there and where it's supposed to be, everybody else needs to keep out of the way. So Mr. Best is coming from Hudson in his train. He's on time. Mr. DeWeese is his fireman. And they're doing what they do. They're just rolling up from Hudson. Mr. Frisbee leaves Chatham thinking the Best train had already come through. Mr. Frisbee comes to Ghent. The Ghent station agent looks out, expects him to pull over. so the train from Hudson can come through. Plenty of lines here to pull over and park here in Ghent. He doesn't. He keeps going. And I can't remember his name right now. The man, the agent in Ghent, must have known what was going to happen. And he just stood there helpless. And about a mile south of the hamlet, Mr. Best is going along. And Rob, this wouldn't have happened any other place, but the sharpest blind curve between Hudson and Ghent. Mr. Best is coming in from Hudson. He comes around that corner. Mr. Frisbee's coming south. They see each other, throw on the brakes. Again, the man coming from Ghent, I get their names mixed up a little bit. Mr. Frisbee jumps again with his fireman. The trains crash. Mr. Best, coming from Hudson, and his fireman, Mr. Deweese, did not get off. And when the trains hit head-on, all the coal shifted forward. They were up to their shoulders. The steam broke loose from the engine, and they were cooked. Mr. Hogaboom on his farm nearby heard it. He went running up, and things happened fast. This is 10 o'clock in the morning. 1 o'clock in the afternoon, there's a coroner's inquest at the Bartlett House. Mr. Hogaboom, who was on the scene and was an attorney and farmer, he's running a jury for a coroner's inquest. And they couldn't really determine anything. Poor Mr. Frisbee's half out of his mind. 2 years later, it all goes to court because the railroad doesn't want to pay out the death claim to Mr. Deweese's widow. And like I said, I found a 350-page transcript that goes into every detail, doctor's testimony. And I just felt very, very close to those people. We all lead individual, special lives in our community today, and everyday people did the same thing back then. And Mr. Frisbee's final words, because he had to testify, well, his second to last thing he said was that the engineer who was killed was his best friend, and he had written him a letter to get reinstated as an engineer. And the last thing he said was, railroading doesn't suit me much anymore. Because one thing some people remember, many don't know, is right in the heart of Ghent, where the post office is, the furniture store, the Ghent development, the Dairy Queen, there was the county home. From about 1830 to 1955, that was the poorhouse, also a mental institution, and about 175 to 200 residents lived there. And they farmed the area, which is now the Ghent development, about a 200-acre farm. So right in the heart of this hamlet, with the Borden's plant on one end and the hay presses and all of this going on, there was a 200-acre farm farmed by people who were down on their luck, some alcoholic, some with mental health problems. And in later years, I think there are a lot of horror stories from the 19th century with how we handled people who are less fortunate. But in the 20th century, there are stories of what a marvelous place it was. Fresh baked bread every day, fresh milk from the farm. They had a pig slaughtering house right there on the farm. Rob, the place actually made money for the county. There were several profitable years of the farm. But imagine driving through Ghent here and there's a farm and 200 people who operate it living right there.
I want to thank you, Greg Berninger, again, the town historian of Ghent. Mm-hmm. And there's a beautiful book that was published that's available for purchase. So I'd recommend my audience to go and to Love Apple Farm.
Chatham Bookstore.
Love
Apple Farm and right here at the town hall.
Okay. Sounds great. Well, thank you so much, Greg.
It was a pleasure, Rob. It's always nice to talk history.
Thank you.